responsibility is so good. It feels so natural.
What's something you've written and you've just gone, I can't know?
You can look at it and kind of try and learn from the things you've been through.
You write songs, right?
I've read that a few times too. I know, we've sold that many records.
This week on Myth's Best Bits, we check in with Besnard Lakes frontman Jace Lasek about Kenny Rogers and the inspiration behind the fascinating title of their new record, The Coliseum Complex Museum. Will Anderson dropped by ahead of his new comedy show, Fire at Will, that led to some interesting word associations. But first up, Miff spoke to the multi-talented UK spoken word performer, Kate Tempest.
To every booth, the back of every head could be hers. It's no use. His thoughts by the bar, thinking man, I'll never find her. And then he realizes that he's standing beside her. She stands there awkward, his eyes are as loud as the bass. And she can recognize something in his face. She scribbles down a number, lingering glance, and she lets herself think maybe this could be her chance. But will it be this way forever? These are lonely days. What if she could be the one that makes it better? He looks away, can't hold her gaze.
Double J, that is Kate Tempest from the album Everybody Down, and I'm pretty excited to have Kate Tempest in the Double J studios because I've just been talking to her while that song was playing about emotional memories that are connected to music. And me, with Kate Tempest's music, those emotional memories are very strong. When I came back to Australia for this job, as you know, for Double J, I'd been living in London for a while and I put on Kate Tempest's album and it worked as a kind of comfort for me in a strange way. So it's a bit of an honour to be talking to you, Kate. Welcome to the Double J studios.
Thanks for having me on.
Do you have equally strong emotional memories connected to particular songs or artists? Has that happened to you quite a lot?
Yeah, of course. I think everybody does. Everyone who loves music and listens to it in that way that you do and you love music and you kind of immerse yourself in whatever you're listening to at the time, then of course those records stand for that time in a much more kind of physical way than you can even explain. You know, what's interesting is that once that happens, the album, it's got nothing to do with the person who made it.
Exactly.
You know, this memory that you have with my record, it's got nothing to do with me. And that's like it's one of the most amazing things to get your head around, that music has this life which is all about the listener. You know, when you find it and you feel it and you take it on, it's yours in a whole different way to, you know.
You're right. It's like a second life for something that you can't control, which is kind of wonderful. It makes it organic, doesn't it?
Yeah, it means it lives. It means it has life. Yeah.
Your characters, though, that you speak about on the album are characters that recur in a book that you've written. But I want to talk about them. I mean, some of the stories are a little bit grim. There's Becky, there's Pete and Harry, I think. How did you create these characters initially? Take me back. How did they become real in your mind?
Well, Dan Carey, who produced this record, he's like a, you know, successful. He's produced loads of amazing stuff, and I'd met him and he'd been to my gigs, but I couldn't get any time with him in his studio because he was so busy and I was kind of nobody, you know, like I didn't have a record deal or anything like that.
Yep.
But we really wanted to work together, so I would go down to his studio in his downtime, Saturday night or after a session. And we managed to get some time. We started writing this demo. And the first track we made was Lonely Days, which is the one you just played, actually. But the first version of that, we wrote it in the studio. It was like him and her. There was no Pete, no Becky. They were just him and her. And they kind of skirted around each other in this story, this kind of verse-for-verse perspective-switching story. And we had this idea that maybe they could meet in one version of the song and not meet in another version. And as you shuffled it on your iPod or whatever, you'd get different endings. And we were kind of having all these ideas. And then it was so long before I could get back in the studio with Dan that this song was just living and living and living. And I was thinking about this him and her character. And basically out of that came this idea of Pete and Becky and sustaining a narrative over the course of a whole album. And then from there, as I was thinking about these characters, I was writing chapters, prose, to try and get my head around who they were. And that's what developed into the first draft of the novel. While simultaneously, I was getting more time in the studio with Dan and the album was coming to life. And then by the time we got more... It sounds so convoluted. It seems much simpler than that. By the time I got back in the studio, the characters had life. That was all I'm trying to say.
That's fantastic. And then the album really took on a life of its own. You were nominated for a Mercury Music Prize, yeah, which is the UK version of Best Album for 2015. How did that feel? I mean, going from just being in the studio trying to get time with someone to then all of a sudden it basically exploding for you.
It felt amazing. You know, it's been... been like 15 years. I started rapping when I was 14, 15, 30 now. And it's been a long time of trying to get heard, trying to get these bigger stages and trying to get into the music industry, which seems when you don't have an access point, it's just a locked door, you know, and you can be gigging for years and building a rep and doing, but you can't get beyond this kind of like iron bubble. You just can't break through it. And then suddenly we made this record and it just felt like this kind of opening, and I was blown away by every opportunity that I've had since then. You know, here we are in Australia. This is as far away as we could possibly be traveling with our music. I feel very lucky, but you know, also
you've worked hard.
Yeah, it's like a humbling feeling, but it's like oh, finally we get to start. You know, yeah. 15 years later, and I get to begin.
Isn't that strange? People often don't think about the process that leads up to that point, do they? I watched your Glastonbury performance just yesterday to remind myself, and I don't know, your face was the best thing. It was like watching someone who was just going, oh, my God, this is happening.
Yeah.
Was that what you were feeling when you started performing at Glastonbury last year? What was that feeling? What were you experiencing?
Well, so Glastonbury and I have a relationship that goes back many years. Like, I've like busked around that festival. I've kind of got in as a poet performing in like a tiny little muddy hut, and I've used that ticket in to try and get on different stages. Like, for years I've been playing at kind of progressively bigger and bigger stages. And when I say bigger, I mean like that could fit 20 people into a small tent. Then it was like maybe 100 could squeeze in here. And then eventually we got the Park stage, which is for me the best stage there because it's the best lineup. You get the best sound. It's in one of the most beautiful spots. It feels intimate, even though, you know, 15,000-20,000 people can watch you. And I walked out onto stage and I just remembered all of the acts that I'd seen on that stage when I'd been in that crowd. I just felt like, you know, there are moments when you check in with what you're doing. You must have it in your job, or the listeners have it in theirs. Yeah. Like, you carry on living life. You go through whatever you're doing. You're working. You're doing your thing. Same, you know, in life with relationships, you're just loving, da da da. And then now and again, you check in with what's happening. You know, a big thing happens. You know, a big moment, Glastonbury, or, you know, you get married or whatever. You have a child. And you're like, wow, I'm doing this. I'm alive. I'm an adult. And I'm doing this. Like, this is happening. She's putting herself through uni. It's hard work. But will it be this way forever? These are lonely days. What if she could be the one that makes it better? He looks away, can't hold her. Myth's Best Bits on Double J.
Hey, Will, your show is Fire at Will. And
At Will.
I've got people to text in things they want you to respond to.
Okay, nice. So it's kind of like a word association thing. Is that what you're looking for?
Yep. Okay, so...
This is like a Radio Rorschach test.
Yeah.
You're going to learn something about my psyche from my responses to this. I'll learn something about my psyche from my responses to this.
You will. All right. Okay. Jerry Hall, Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, I mean, okay.
Isn't that sensual, that
couple. I mean, romance is not dead for a start. That's what I think. You know, I mean, do they have a name? Do they have like a, are they RuPaul or RuPaul?
RuPaul.
Oh, RuPaul. All right. This has started well. Yeah. Okay. There we go. RuPaul. All right. Well, RuPaul, it may not get better than that, guys. Sorry.
We should end this segment here.
Yeah, all right. Nailed it.
Yeah,
I'm out of here. Right. Storm's out of studio. RuPaul.
Oh, God. Okay. Flat earthers.
Oh, flat earthers. Right.
Apparently it's a new thing. Someone's starting to believe again.
Oh, hang on. They're believing that the earth is flat again?
There's a rapper in America who has come out and said that the earth is actually flat.
Really? Yes. I mean, bless him.
Yeah.
Like, is this a man who's never...
Not sure. Never been on a plane, I think, to ever see the curve of the earth. Never or perhaps seen photos from space.
A globe?
Yeah.
Like, did he, I mean, is this the problem, though? Is the problem that kids aren't seeing globes anymore?
I think you're right.
I mean, I think that's the thing. Like, we've got to make globes cooler. You know, here's what I suggest. Maybe Flavor Flav could start hanging a globe around his neck rather. I mean, who wants a clock anymore? We've all got phones that have the time on them. But obviously, you know, to raise some awareness, you know, Chuck D's always been the person, like, you know, who's been a bit more political and a bit more worldly. But I think this is Flav's opportunity.
It is Flav's.
To step up and sort of make a statement of being like, here we go. I got a globe around my neck.
I like it. All right, solution with a problem. Okay. Hottest 100.
Loved it. Yeah. Loved it. Sat there yesterday, listened to the Hottest 100. And it's my yearly, you know, like every year, I'm over 40 now. And every year over 40, you've got to go to the doctor every year. You've got to get a full checkup. And for me, the biggest thing is I sit down and listen to the Hottest 100 and see how much music I still know about. And
how'd you go yesterday? What was your percentage?
You know what? Here's the thing that I have noticed is like I was pretty good. I have certainly got to that point where every hard rock song just sounds like people shouting at their dad. Like, you know what I mean? Like, every hard rock song that came on was like, no, Dad, I won't go to my bedroom, Dad. No, you're not even my real dad. I hate you so much. I mean, I'm not sure they were the lyrics, but that sounded doesn't like matter. The lyrics to every single song. Oh. So I like that. I am going to put together a super group for next year to win the Hottest 100. I'm going to call it Jet Faker. I'm going to get the guys from Jet and Chet Faker together. And Jet Faker, that's going to be... Or and I think from all of us, Mackler enough. Mackler enough now. That'll do, Mackle.
Yeah, exactly. Do. We're done. All right, Will. I am firing at Will.
Okay.
Questions Let's to Will Anderson because that's what his show's called. And by the sound of things, I think... You're going to be fine.
Maybe this should have been the show. If I thought about it, I could have just...
just get the audience. You don't need
to... I mean, just a fire-me question.
This is good. Well, you still can. You've got time.
That's a good point. Well, I mean, you don't need time for that, do you? No. So you've still got time to not prepare your show. Thanks, Miff.
Okay, the word funky, is it okay?
Funky.
Because I say no. I don't know how you feel.
You say... Okay.
I sacked myself last week on air for using the...
For using the word funky.
I said, that's a funky little ditty, and I actually had to sack myself personally.
No, in the way you've used it?
Yeah.
Sure. Mm. I think you could say, oh, there's a bit of a funky smell in here. Mm. I still think you could use that. I think if
no
you
one
were...
really uses it in terms of smell, do they?
Yeah, like
you
I do.
Go, oh, that's so, funky.
It's a bit funky. Mm. Yeah, I would say if you met George Michael and you were having like a little conversation about whether things were funky or too funky, that would be an appropriate time. That's his favourite game, Funky Too Funky. You always play it with George Michael. Literally what he was playing in that toilet when they arrested him was a game he plays called Funky Too Funky. It was a big mix-up. I think apart from that, I think that's probably, that'd be about it.
All right, fair enough. We got one. We
it's
got
contextual.
One. We got one more here, Donald right. Trump.
Oh. I mean, it's amazing that he's running for president in the way, it's like the wrestling. That's what it looks like to me. He's like a heel in the WWE. And I think he's going to take his meetings with foreign leaders in the middle of the ring. You know, halfway through a meeting with Putin, he's going to pull out a chair from under the ring. He's going to have some barbed wire. He's going to come off the high rise. I mean, it feels like it's a bet. It feels like he's had a bet with one of his friends and he's got, there's no way that I can say this next thing and still go on running for president. And then he says it and his popularity goes up. And he goes, he said the other day, he goes, I could shoot someone and my polls wouldn't go down. And everyone was like, I mean, everyone was like, kind of like, yeah, I think that's true.
The best new music on Double J.
Violent Femmes keep wearing their heart on their sleeve on their first new music in 16 years, Memory. And progressive house legends Underworld give us the massive and mesmerising I Exhale.
See the full list of new music at doublej.net.au.
Miff's Best Bits on Double J.
Something quite interesting now, Canadian group The Besnard Lakes. They've returned with their fifth album with the intriguing title, and this is it, A Coliseum Complex Museum. That's what it's called. I was lucky enough to have a chat with frontman Jace Lasek, and if you're curious about how the record got such a unique title, or and this is what intrigues me, how one of their tracks sounds like a Kenny Rogers desert song, and that's their words, and not mine, but of course my ears prick up for that. Then Jace explores these topics and more about the album in this chat. So here he is talking about how he felt about the new release.
Yeah, we're very happy with it. It's, you know, as Augie says, it's the best thing we've ever done. A lot of people have been saying it's like kind of the pinnacle of our maturity, and it's the songs are, we made a conscious effort to try to make the songs just a bit more concise, because, you know, our songs tend to be really sprawling. So it was an effort this time to kind of keep everything a little bit together and tighter and shorter. And I think it turned out, we're really happy with it. We had a lot of fun making this record.
There's often a story behind your records. So what is the story with this one?
Well, it's kind of a continuation of the Spy story. But when we were driving through Texas on tour a couple of years ago, I saw a sign on the side of the road that said Coliseum, and then there was an arrow, and then Complex, and then there was an arrow, and then Museum, and there was another arrow. So I just like read all three words and decided that I wanted to just go to there, the Coliseum Complex Museum. I thought that would be like the coolest place to go to, because I didn't even really know what that would be. So I wrote that down, and then when we started making the album, I remembered it and looked at my notebook and started sort of visualizing this idea of what a Coliseum Complex Museum would actually be. And so it kind of really helped inform like the way we built the record, and lyrically, at least for me, it was like kind of a stepping stone to help me kind of figure out like what we were going to be writing about. We kind of want the album to be something that people sit down and listen to from front to back. So the museum is like a thing that you enter into in like the 45 minutes that you lose yourself, hopefully, in the album with. Is you entering the museum and you meet the Bray Road Beast, and you know, there's golden lions walking around, and then people are telling you these stories.
I want to talk to you about the song The Plain Moon. You've described it, and this makes me very happy, as a Kenny Rogers desert song. As a fellow lover of Kenny Rogers, this makes me so happy. Talk me through it.
Yeah, like I said, it's like that song almost, it's been sitting around for years. We started writing that song near the end of, I think it was right after Dark Horse was made, we wrote that song, and it's been sitting around, you know, since through Roaring Night, we worked on it a little bit and threw it away, and then UFO, we worked on it a little bit, threw it away, and I didn't think it was ever going to work, and then Augie took a crack at the verse, and geez, she nailed it. But there was, she had a verse, and then there was a space. And I don't know what it was. For some reason, I was channeling Kenny Rogers. I don't. The song sort of feels like this, like, dirty country desert song to me. I don't know if it feels that way to anybody else, but so I kind of did that, and then so. When I sang the response to her, I kind of felt like, you know, the cover of the Gambler, where, you know, he's like, you know, sitting there playing poker with a, you know, with a toothpick in his mouth, and I'm like, that's the kind of vibe I'm going for.
Thank you. catch up with Miff Warhurst for lunch. Weekdays from 11 on Double J.